a Radio 1 91 FM podcast.
Hi, and welcome to Let's Go for Coffee with Hannah and Abby.
In this week's episode, we asked you guys for some questions and answers and some advice that you'd like to hear from us.
So buckle in, get a coffee maybe, or a tea, and come with us on a bit more of a fun, a very candid, and
very candid.
Yeah, a wild look into our brains. Hello! How are you doing, Hannah?
I'm good. I'm so good. How are you, Abby?
It's been a rough day. I'm not going to lie to you. It's been actually just a rough couple of weeks, but we're getting back into it, and there's nothing I'd rather do than record a little podcast with you, so...
Aw, yeah, well, we are on other sides of the country at the moment. I'm in Dunedin still, and then Abby is in Auckland as well.
Still in lockdown.
Yeah, so that's a totally different kind of setup and headspace to be in.
It is, alongside health problems and university ramping up, and everything's a go.
Yeah,
but
everything's happening.
Yeah, but we didn't want to stop making podcasts for you guys, so here we are.
Yeah, no, we didn't want to stop making podcasts for ourselves either, I feel like.
It was mostly for ourselves.
But no, this episode is a little extra one. So we had planned on stopping at 4, but we kind of wanted to continue. So this is essentially a Q&A, because we hoped that our podcast served as kind of a conversation starter and kind of hopefully start a bit of reflection and, you know,
yeah, encourage conversation.
Flowing. Yeah, so we thought perhaps the podcast may have triggered some stuff for you positively, and asked for some of your advice from our community on our Instagram page, Let's Go for Coffee. And we heard back from some of you, and that's super exciting and super cool. Okay. Question number one.
Yes.
Kicking it off. Love it. Alrighty. So we've got...
You said a pun. Kicking it off. The first question is about sport.
Oh. I didn't clock that. Okay. Nice. Over.
Sorry, childhood brain. Right.
Number one is, can you discuss the toxic side of school sport and also the underrepresentation of women? So it's kind of a double question.
Yeah, a big one. Because, I mean, we both played sport all throughout high school at different levels and different types of sports. What's your take on sport in school?
So I was a big netball gal.
You sure were.
Played in like 3 teams most seasons. You have like club, school and rep, and totally was in the like competitive side, because I think there's very much 2 different sides of sport. There's like the
Yeah, I was in the non-competitive form of movement.
Yeah, which
well,
is totally
netball,
valid.
For netball, not for rowing, but for netball.
Yeah, and so then you kind of got, I think, towards the more competitive side of things. There was a really cutthroat be-all and end-all to the sport, and I think that enjoyment in a lot of times was not the priority.
I mean, especially at our school, we had girls that were, like, good enough to go and start playing for professional teams when they graduated, and then there's people that are just, like, really good, but their goal isn't to play professionally, and trying to balance that with, like, being a... almost professional level, but then not being too harsh can be very difficult.
Yeah, and to balance all of the sport things with every other aspect of your life was just, I think, at the upper end, almost impossible.
Yeah.
And I mean, for some people, it makes complete sense, because that is your profession, that is your priority, and what you're willing to sacrifice other things for it. But I think for a lot of people who are kind of in that, but not quite there, or just like didn't want to be, then it kind of got yucky and political, and you'd have parents like commenting on who should be in things and who shouldn't, and who's showing up to things and who's not, and like,
oh my god,
that
I had
side
that
of it as well was like yucky.
Yeah, no, I had that in rowing. So I was a rower for a couple years in high school, and then it just got too toxic and I left. But it was interesting, the actual club well, from my experience, I'm not saying this is everyone's experience, the actual like club and rowing for me was not toxic at all. Like the coaches and everything like that, they did their best to keep everything like, you know, you just rowed your hardest and whoever ended up on top got put in the boat and that was that. I know that that isn't how everyone felt, but that's how I felt. But the community, on the other hand, a little more toxic, which I think is one, because you're pitting young girls and guys against each other from a very young age and you're telling them, like, directly compare yourself to the other person and only one of you's getting in type of thing, which can be tricky and can cause a lot of cattiness that maybe wasn't there. But the other interesting thing is the toxicity from the parents.
Oh, yeah.
Because, like, teenagers being toxic is one thing, right? It's high school. Mm-hmm. It happens. But, like, parents getting involved, oh, my God. The amount of, like, parents that had their opinion, not just on, like, if their kid should be in the boat, but, like, what should happen. Or, like, one girl's mum told us, like, what we needed to do. And we were like, that's just not, one, it's not our race plan. Two, that's not what we do. Like, that's just not possible. It's not how it happens. And also three, what you're saying we did isn't what we did. Like, you know, that's just your opinion. But like, she thought that she was just like better than our coach and like started telling us. And it was like, this isn't very helpful. Like, we're exhausted 15-year-olds who are working out like 10 times a week. I don't really want to hear your opinion after I race.
No, agreed. I think it's the most toxic stuff comes from the adults in the situation.
Yeah, and the kids kind of just feed off of that, to be honest.
Yeah, and there's already such a power imbalance as well. Like, who's a kid to kind of stand up to an adult? Like, that's super scary. And I think you've gone through all of school being like, adult is right, and I'm like learning from that. Yeah. And then when you have parents like making really inappropriate comments or whatever, it's like, oof. I remember I went on SOSU umpiring and went away on one of the under 15 tournaments and was, you know, I stayed with the team and we had this horrendous manager.
Oh no.
That was talking so much smack about the coach and about the coach's like relationships and love life and stuff to all of these like under 15 year olds, including her daughter and their friends. And the team just like absolutely fell apart. Like, I was there and I was like, this is horrible to be in and just such like a bad environment, which then they played all terribly.
Yeah, I mean, distractions, right?
Yeah.
Those people are supposed to be like your stronghold, not the drama in the team.
Yeah.
What's your view on the underrepresentation and funding of women in sport?
Well, I mean, I think first things first, there is a huge underrepresentation and funding of women in sport. At our school, I think as well, the guys would get all the good coaches and then we'd get like almost what was left over.
Yeah, it's such a hard one because it was like our ratio of boy to girl was 2-1. It was kind of like, yeah, okay, there is more boys, but then also you're waiting.
Yeah, but then it kind of like compounds itself because, I mean, we played volleyball and we literally had a football coach as our coach.
Yeah.
And I was like, how are you supposed to do well? How are you supposed to improve and grow and get better if you've got someone who's like, hey guys, it's all about teamwork. And it's like, well, sometimes actually it's about how you hit the ball.
Yeah.
And that's pretty like microcosm of it. So it's that, that's at school. And then you look at like the wider national and international picture and you just see just so many disparities between what funding and engagement traditionally men's sport get compared with female is like pretty big, pretty significant.
I think women's tennis is doing some cool stuff and I think they've really put themselves on the map, and the fact that tennis players get paid pretty equally now is very cool.
Mm-hmm.
And something that kind of shows that it's possible for both sides to get paid, and obviously there is a economic issue with it because some sports the men's team are way more popular and will create a lot more money.
Yeah.
But then there's also a lot of sports where that's not actually the case and it's just an excuse that's made. So I think it's finding that balance, because I know, like, especially for like USA women's football and stuff like that, like they were getting more viewers, creating more representation, like getting more sponsors than the men's, yet they still weren't getting paid as well, which didn't really make sense, you know? But overall, there is a changing of the tides, but it's still early.
Yeah, agreed. And I think it doesn't help as well that there's a real culture. It was way more common for girls to drop out of sport earlier.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, it is I don't want to say it's harder for girls to continue with sport, because not that's not all girls. And, you know, some girls, it's their passion and they really enjoy it and they're really good at it and their bodies are really good at it. But I find for a lot of girls, like, puberty is really hard, and everything like that is really hard on your body. So maintaining a high level of sport, especially while you're studying or anything like that, it becomes very difficult, and it's very taxing. And I know that it's taxing on boys' bodies too, but I don't know, for some reason I think it feels more taxing. I don't, maybe that's just my view and my opinion, but I think that definitely influences a lot of people not staying in sport as long as they would have otherwise.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think women's sport, a lot of, I remember if we discussed this before, but women's sport, I feel like a lot of the draw card is like the sex appeal and how, you know, like you think of beach volleyball or whatever, like no one's watching the sport to appreciate the athleticism.
It doesn't have the same camaraderie maybe as guys' sport. A lot of the time, a lot of our guy mates play pretty socially in sport, you know, but they continue playing throughout. Whereas I think with girls' sport, it's kind of like if you're not going to be competitive, then a lot of people just drop out instead of having that camaraderie. And maybe that's an issue with creating a spirit within girls' sport, or maybe it's something like that that needs to be addressed. I don't know. I mean, we had friends that didn't really want to engage, but now they are back into sport. So maybe it's just a, you know, coming of age thing.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of where I was going with it, was like the sense of if a lot of the value, or at least perceived value, is what you look like, then if you're not comfortable in that, then you're unlikely to kind of put yourself in a space where you're going to be judged on what you look like rather than your actual ability, even if you're not intending to be super competitive with it. But no, very interesting.
Following on from that, what is your experience with weight and femininity? Because that's a big part in sport, but then also just a big part in life in general.
So I had this discussion with someone and I was like, that's a really good piece of the puzzle that I think we kind of probably skimmed over in the eating disorders discussion. I think there's a really close link, or like perceived link, that like women are supposed to be like little and
slender.
You know, yeah, and that's kind of the respectful thing, and that also is feminine. Like
either that or they're like really sexy, you know, like curvaceous.
Oh yeah, you know? True.
There's like the the either way, the really sweet slender or the real like ba ba boom.
That's a really good point, actually, because I only like thought of the little one. And I think because we talked about how like you and your boyfriend, and you're like, I weigh more than him, and that doesn't have anything to do with it.
Yeah, I'm like bigger than him.
That norm is like, because he's the man, he should be bigger, and because you're like
which a gal,
you should be smaller. But
and I am aware of it. Like I am very aware of, in the weird sense of like, it has no issue in our relationship, and has you know, it doesn't play any part in it. And the only part really is that we both can carry each other around. I don't know, like, you know, this little thing, but like it doesn't really mean anything. But I think it's very important for a lot of people. So many people have made it such an issue, or talked about it as such an issue, and it made me aware of it, and I was like, oh my god, like am I too big for this relationship, or I don't know, which is just it's ridiculous. But
it's ridiculous, but it's so tied up, like if you're struggling, I think, with, because I was pretty muscular growing up, and like if you are struggling with any kind of sense of femininity, I think, or like feeling, you know, pretty and nice, then it can be quite easy to turn to weight as a solution. If you, and I think if you catch yourself in that headspace as well of being like, oh, I feel like I need to lose weight, again, question why, and see whether that comes into being like, do I feel feminine and do I feel comfortable?
Very true. Because like so like we talked about in the other episode, I have a larger bottom, but my boobs are like, they're not even small. They're just a regular size, right? But because my lower body is bigger than my upper body proportionally, I feel like I've always been very aware of it, because I've always known that like if I had big boobs, then I would be that curvy figure. But because I don't, I just kind of look like a bit straight and then curve. Which is, it's fine. It's a body type. It's a body. It's great, right? But I've just been aware of it. Because it's the other thing, right? It's either like I could lose weight and be like slender, or if I had bigger boobs, I could be this body type. And And it's being aware of both of those things and being like, what do I want to do? Where do I want to go? And then not actually just sitting there and being like, I look great. I look fine. You know, like,
yeah,
my boobs are my boobs.
Yeah, and you can be feminine.
Yeah.
Without altering and trying to adapt your weight, because...
Like, I used to wear such big push-up bras when I was, like, 14 and 15.
Oh, no.
Like, all of us did that, I know. And you're sitting there and you're going, why do you want your boobs out? Not that there's any problem with having your boobs out, but, like, why do you want them out? Now, if they're out for me, it's like, I feel great. Before, if they were out, it's like, I'm trying to attract attention. I'm trying to look pretty and feminine. You know? Like, it's that change of mindset of why I'm doing something.
Yeah.
Which is, yeah, it's just interesting how our weight compared to our significant others or other people, but then also just our actual body shape changes how we view ourselves. Femininity?
That's a horrible word. I'm looking at it and there's way too many N's, way too many I's.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's one too many of each. Wow.
Agree.
Okay. How do you look after yourself whilst helping your friends?
That's a really good question. And my brain's taking it straight to like a mental health place. Like, how do you look after yourself mentally whilst helping out your friends if they're struggling? I think it's really important to set clear boundaries on and be like really clear and transparent with where you're at. Like, if you're not in a good place and not able to take on stuff, you gotta be open to that and then actively work on self-care so that you can kind of bring yourself up to a place where you are. Because I think, like, I love helping out my friends or like listening to them or working through, you know, like, you want to be in a place where you can help your friends. So kind of putting yourself first isn't really being like selfish or whatever. It's actually probably the least selfish thing you could do, because then you can help others.
I also find that, like, generally my tell sign if I'm not in a good place to deal with something for someone else is like, if someone messaged me and I look at my phone and I'm like, I can't, you know, that like dreaded feeling. And it's not that because they message you, it's just because you're like, I don't have a response, I can't think right now, like, I just can't. And I find that oftentimes when you are helping other people, or when you are, you can find yourself on your phone a lot, doing a lot of those things, and that can be very draining. And I think just putting away your phone and just giving yourself some time is also very vital. If you're constantly on alert about other people, you're not really chill, and a phone is a big part of that. And I think turning the phone over is a big thing.
Agreed. I deleted Instagram yesterday.
Whoa.
Which was like, I mean, I love Instagram, but then I was just finding myself like on it all the time and feeling super tired and just like a bit yuck. And then I was like, you know what? I'm just going to like delete it for a day.
Oh, yeah.
And I wasn't sure how I'd feel about it. But at the moment, I'm unbothered. I was super bored yesterday, but that was fine.
That's the same when I deleted TikTok. It was like, for the first day, I was like, I want to scroll and I don't have it to scroll. And then after that, I was like, oh, I don't even think about going on it. But yeah, putting away your phone. Honestly, I mean, I say this and then like I'm in lockdown, so I'm kind of addicted to my phone. But just putting it away is, oh, it's so much better. Even if it's like you put it away and you watch a movie or something on your laptop, like, even though that's still screen time, at least you're not in a fight or flight kind of sense, you know, and you can just relax.
And I think another one for like how to look after yourself while you're helping your friends is to kind of not necessarily take on that role of, you're not there to do the mahi for them. You're like, your role is to kind of be that support person and just make sure that you're not putting yourself in like a full-on responsibility thing of being like, if they do something, it's my fault. Like, that is not gonna do good for you.
Yeah, like I told Connor when we started dating, if I'm ever anxious and I'm telling you that I'm anxious or something, I don't expect you to fix it. Like, I know you can't fix it. I'm just telling you because I just need to tell someone, but don't feel any responsibility to have to do anything about that other than just, you know, be nice, obviously, you know?
Yeah.
I'm not coming to you because I think you can fix my problems. Be a safe space to talk if you can, and if it's not the right time to talk, just be really open about that and be like, look, I love you, but right now I'm exhausted and I just need to deal with some stuff, and I'll come back and I'll message you when I'm ready. And
yeah. Alrighty. Do you, your friends, your family tell each other about the attributes you like about them? both physical and mental?
This is an interesting one, because obviously girls, when you go out or you do something, it's like, ooh, like, oh, wow, yeah. That dress. Oh, wow, you look so good. Oh, looking great. I feel like girls do compliment quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. But I agree with that.
I don't know how not that it doesn't feel sincere. Obviously, it feels like a sincere compliment. I don't know how, like, if it's just largely swayed towards, like, you know, going out and dressing up nicely. And maybe it's not in the general sense of just, like, an everyday, you know, comment.
Mm. Yeah, I don't think I compliment my family that much either.
Yeah, I think family's a bit different on this one. Not that it should be different, just like I think that it is different. I don't know. Because I feel like my family and I, we are open and we do say stuff. My mum will tell me if I look good in a photo or something, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, no, I'd say probably we don't really for my family, but then I think friends, I think I'm trying to be more conscious of it and like be more, like when you think a thought of something, say it.
Yeah. Well, because we played a game of We're Not Really Strangers with a couple of our friends this summer. And I became very aware from that game that I wasn't as in touch with my friends emotionally as maybe I thought. I mean, like, obviously we're in different cities, we're doing different things, we don't see each other that often, but it's mm-hmm. quite easy to lose touch of, like, how appreciated a person feels in a group or what someone needs a compliment on sometimes. And through that game, we actually realized, like, what everyone was kind of struggling with or what everyone was feeling in that moment, and we were able to reset and be like, okay, well, I'll pay more attention to that, or I'll, you know... Mm-hmm. You can't beat yourself up for, like, not knowing what someone needs.
Yeah.
But it's quite interesting to hear what someone needs and being like, oh, like, I could totally do that. I just didn't realize that that's what you needed.
And I think as well, yeah, not knowing what compliments matter, because I'm, like, pretty blasé about compliments because I just don't really take them well. But if you don't know what someone, like, is insecure about, I feel like when you get, like, complimented genuinely, spontaneously about something that you've been really working towards or like struggling with particularly, that just like hits so much different.
Yeah.
And so to kind of be open about that and have the opportunity to then actually see it in real life in the wild per se if someone's told you about something.
Yeah, exactly. Which I think was really like made aware to me. Even like one of our friends was like, oh, I wasn't sure about how valued I was in the group, and then something happened, I realized that, like, you guys did really like me. And I was like, wow, like, I wasn't even thinking that you were in that place. I didn't even know that. I think it is important to do acts and also words that compliment people. Mm-hmm. Like, acts are just as great. And like you said, not everyone's great at taking compliments. But there's lots of ways to show people that you appreciate, like, them physically, mentally, and also, like, their kindness. Mm-hmm. I think complimenting people and kindness is such a big one. We don't really, like, give people credit for their kindness a lot unless they're, like, super, super kind, which I think we could work on as people.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
Alrighty. Next question. What do you do when you feel like you and your significant other aren't in similar life paths / places?
This is so hard. Because I was talking to one of our friends about this recently, and we were talking and I said... Like, and she, because she was like, you know, you just see people and they love each other so much, but it's like, it still doesn't work. And it's like, why? And I was like, yeah, I mean, love doesn't do the heavy lifting in a relationship. You know, because you can love a lot of people. You can love in a lot of different ways, but like, that's not the heavy lifting in the relationship. I would say hard work and luck are mostly luck, to be honest with you. You know, because like luck in terms of like what are you and your significant other willing to sacrifice for each other, luck in terms of like what do you guys want, luck in terms of like what are you doing with your lives right now. You know, there's so many situations and paths that like you are in no control of, and it's just happening, and you find that person at that time and you can love them heaps, and it still doesn't change their path, it still doesn't change their luck, it still doesn't change anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the major heavy lifting of the relationship, and it sucks because it's like you can care about someone immensely, but I think my main advice to that is just obviously if it's an immediate problem and it's like it's something that needs to be decided now, I'm really sorry and that's really hard, and no matter what decision's made, it's hard because someone has to sacrifice something or you have to give up the relationship. But if it's not something that's immediate and it's something that's just like a concern to you that like maybe, you know, maybe you want to do different things down the path or something like that, especially at our age when marriage, kids, everything, it doesn't have to be immediately, you know?
It's not impending.
It's not impending. Yeah. And it's kind of like, you can have fun. You can just enjoy your time. You don't need to rush into, you know? So it's like, if you're having fun with that person and you're enjoying yourself and it's all good and you're happy, then just let it be.
Yeah, like you're saying, don't stress about a potential future diversion of path when you're actually like, for now, you're all good.
Cross the bridge when you come to it.
Mm-hmm.
And
I like that advice.
Like, it sounds difficult, but it's like, why make decisions about things that are hypotheticals?
Oh, that is the language of my brain.
Like, so Connor and I started dating when I was in my last year of high school. And I always knew that I wanted to go overseas for university. So,
yeah.
And like, I was very honest with that, with him. And, you know, we were honest about it. And we just kind of assumed that like, we'd break up when I left because that, you know, it just seemed a natural thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
And like, so we just kind of enjoyed our relationship until that point came. And then funnily enough, we didn't break up and we're still here and it's been a while. But again, that's what I mean. Like, you know, decisions change. Things change. What people are willing to sacrifice changes. And trying to make a decision now for a future you and a future them, it's not going to be the same. Or it might be the same, but it might cause a different effect, you know? So just let yourself enjoy. And if you're not having fun, then find another fun. But
yeah, I think that's the other thing. It's like, if you are in love with someone or whatever, but you're not enjoying the actual relationship, like...
Yeah. You can love someone, but not be good with them.
Yeah.
It's the same with friends, you know? Like, you can really love a friend, but if they're not good for you all the time, you're not going to hang out with them 24/7, and that's fine. You don't need to.
Mm-hmm.
I think, yeah, just being in touch. But yeah, deal with bridges as they come to you and enjoy the place you're in.
And if you're having concerns and stuff as well, bring them up. You got to kind of talk it out rather than just like ruminating in and panicking about the fact that you're diverging and you don't know what you're going to do. I think, yeah.
Communication.
Transparency is always so important.
Communication, because they're not mind readers, you're not mind readers. And like, yeah, sometimes communication can get dicey and it's like you feel awkward bringing stuff up because it's like, oh, you know, it's going to cause something, but not bringing stuff up causes more things. So
totally.
Next question. What if you Google your symptoms and you have all the diseases and all the mental health conditions?
Oh my God, this is something, okay. So studying psychology, I have self-diagnosed myself. Like honestly, almost every lecture, I'm like, oh my gosh, I definitely have that. I have this disorder. I have this illness.
Yeah.
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 I don't know. I think you have to be like, really, I don't know, diligent about not Googling stuff sometimes.
See, okay, I'm a big Googler. I have to be honest. Really? No, okay,
yeah.
So I have a but with this as well. I'm a big Googler in terms of, I have a chronic pain condition and it's very complex in nature and it can cause a lot of symptoms and a lot of things. And for a long time, I would just like put everything down to it and be like, what's that? It's that. Because I can be in like extreme pain. Like extreme, like I'm in hospital pain, but nothing's wrong with me. So I went a long time being like, I'm a hypochondriac, when that is not what I was. I just have an issue that isn't an issue, but is an issue.
I see. It's like a nerve issue that like tricks your brain into thinking there's an issue, but there's not actually a problem.
Yeah. But here's the thing, right? Okay. I had to learn that actually sometimes I do have real issues. So
yeah,
like
true.
I had a bladder infection. And I was like, nah, it's just chronic pain. It's just chronic pain. And yeah, I was in bed for a couple of days, but that's pretty normal for my chronic pain.
Mm-hmm.
And then my mum went, nah, we should just get it checked out just in case, you know, just in case. And the thing is, I'm so used to going to doctors and being told nothing's wrong with you. It's just your chronic pain. And it's really heartbreaking because you're just like, well, I can't do anything. So I just learned to live with it. And when we did go and get it checked out, the doctor was like, yep, no, you have a bladder infection. We can fix this. And it was like, oh, whoopsie. So sometimes I will Google and be like, okay, realistically, what's going on?
Mm-hmm.
If there's something where it's like, this should just get checked up just in case, because it's not something that just fixes itself by itself, then that's when I'm like, even though I think it's probably not that, I should just get checked out. Like what I did today.
Yeah.
You know, like today I've been having chest pain and I was like, after my vaccine, and I was like, honestly, it's probably my chronic pain. But also, we'd like to know if something was wrong with the heart, you know, that would be a safe thing to do. So that's my big thing. It's like, I Google because I need to know if something is something that needs to be checked or something that, you know, it's okay.
Yeah.
Because also Google tells you you have cancer for everything.
Oh, it tells you literally. Or pregnant. Yeah, you're going to die.
You're either going to die or you're pregnant.
Yeah. I mean, again, I think we've said this before. Like if you're, I think, okay. Weighing things up, like paying to go see a GP so that you're not anxious all the time about potential issues that you may have because you read them on Google, versus living that anxious life that you think that you've got all these debilitating illnesses or like potential like medical disordery stuff. Like, just go to the doctor. You know, sometimes it's like worthwhile paying
100%
to have a clear conscience.
100%. And also like with mental health, like, because there's so many different things, and if you are concerned that you could have mental health problems, no matter whether you're rightly diagnosing yourself or not, like, there's nothing wrong with getting a little check and, like, giving yourself some tips and tricks to fix it, you know?
Yeah. If you think that you've got all of them, I think it's very good to hear that actually people are just anxious or whatever from time to time. And some people, like, sometimes you are just tired for no reason.
But sometimes it is nice to be told. You know, it is nice to be reassured that, like, you're not going crazy. You're okay.
Yeah, but no. If you're finding that you're relating to everything, I think you probably take a step back, do some self-care, and just be like, I am okay. And then maybe book a doctor's appointment if you want as well.
This one, I think, might be maybe a good one for you to answer. What are some casual phrases that people say that are unknowingly a bit triggering? And kind of in conjunction with that, like, I guess also thinking about it in a shared flat eating situation, like, you know, all those types of things, those awkward situations, what can flatties, like, just what can flatties know or people around you know that can be a bit triggering?
Okay, so this is in terms of like an eating disorder or disordered eating, or if you're just like having some struggly time.
Yeah.
struggly time. what can be a bit triggering? People talking super diet culture-y stuff, I still find really, I kind of just don't engage in the discussion because I'm like, I don't know how to relate to this in a way that's not disordered. So like when people like talk about weight loss or what weird things they're eating or just generally diet stuff, I just kind of find that pretty, a bit triggering, I guess, in terms of just like, it just hits me and I'm like, oof, I don't know how to engage with this. I don't know how to relate to this in a healthy, not weird way. That's probably the biggest one that springs to mind.
Yeah.
That people do all the time.
What's something like, that people can change if they like catch themselves doing that? Like, what's something that's comforting?
Oh, I think it's just probably, okay, say if you're like gone for a run, right? And you come home and you're like, wow, I burnt X amount of calories and like I'm feeling so good.
Yeah.
I've like, barely eaten anything today. And that kind of is like, I think what some people do a lot of the time, which is kind of a bit yuck. But anyway, if you flip that on its head and just like, because you can still be proud of yourself for moving and doing fun stuff.
Yeah.
But just like, celebrating that aspect of it,
take the calories
like
and the food out of it,
how it will change your body, is I think a key part to like pivoting that to being like, well, that was just like, I'm really proud of myself, I've built up my endurance and I'm feeling way stronger and stuff like that. Completely changes the narrative and dynamic and kind of how triggering or stressful an interaction like that is. That's probably what I'd say. And then the second half of it, in a shared flat eating situation, what are some things you can do to support your flatty who might be having a hard time? I think I was really lucky that everyone was super non-judgmental. Like, I didn't feel like people were watching what I was eating or...
Yeah, because that gets like, a bit intense as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a big... It's really hard because it's like, as a friend, do you want to... you want to monitor, and I get that. I really, really get that. And I don't know whether for like anorexia or something it's slightly different, but I think for binge and bulimia and stuff, it was more like having no shame around eating in public or eating when you're flat flatties are around and like kind of not commenting on what you're eating. So it just becomes like a less stressful anxiety.
Making it comfortable again.
Yeah. So I think that was a really big one of just like not commenting on like how much you'd eaten or like that kind of stuff, but just being like, generally, this food is yum.
Yeah.
I've made this. It's dinner time. Like,
yeah.
And also having regularity. Oh my God. I mean, I talked about this before, but like having a regular mealtime that you know and can expect to have some food and just like have that really routine. And I get that sometimes you burn stuff and sometimes things are later than usual. But kind of having a knowledge that food is coming.
It takes the stresses away.
Yeah, like just when you get home and there's someone's supposed to be cooking dinner and it's like 6:30 and nothing's happening and I'm like, oh my God, I don't know if I'm going to make it and I don't know what I'm going to do.
Yeah,
that can be also really triggering and stress inducing. So just like having that routine and just kind of supporting normal, regular eating is really helpful.
Interesting. On that, what's your thoughts on the mental health system and or on Mental Health Awareness Week?
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I think I love the idea of Mental Health Awareness Week, and I do get behind it, and I will post something on my Instagram because that's what you do. But I am, the more that I know about it, the more frustrated I find it, like frustrating it is for me. The fact that we are telling people to reach out, and yet we don't really have in many cases, we don't have the resources and kind of don't have the infrastructure in place to kind of really support people in a meaningful way, kind of plays on my conscience. I don't know. It doesn't sit right with me. And I...
Yeah, I mean, I know that...
I struggle.
I know that the system is a bit messed up. And I know that people are working on it as well. I think it's not fair to say that it's just messed up and we're not doing anything about it, because people are trying to do stuff. And...
Mm-hmm.
It's just rightly or wrongly, it is how it is at the moment, but we are trying to fix it. Mental Health Awareness Week makes me uncomfortable, but it shouldn't. I find that sometimes a lot of mental health things can be preachy rather than just like interesting or inclusive, especially on social media. And I think that comes from the goodness of people. I think they're just trying to create a safe space and, you know, put awareness out there, but it's such a fine line between like preachy and just like a fun safe space. But I don't know how to fix that, and because it's so different for everyone what makes people comfortable and what people enjoy. So I don't know, I generally don't really engage in it very much, rightly or wrongly. Like, I appreciate that it's there and I appreciate that people are bringing awareness to mental health because it's necessary, but some things, especially on social media, just make me feel a bit awkward.
I agree. It's kind of preachy at times. I mean, and this is from people who are pretty engaged in the mental health space.
Yeah. Well, I can just imagine how it is for someone who's like, maybe doesn't have mental health struggles or like, you know, because like for me, I'm like, yeah, okay, I relate to that. But even that feels a bit shoved down my throat and I'm struggling with it. So, but yeah, I don't know. It's good for a lot of people.
Yeah, I'd say I have a qualm with the fact that the awareness that we're raising, I don't know that it has the support that it's being like channeled to. But in saying that, I think it's really important, because if we collectively have a better concept of mental health and how to support people, then although the formalized systems may not have the support, collectively we can be better support for each other. Which I think overrides the issue, but we need to work on the systems. But
yeah exactly.
So I'm not saying that it's terrible, but I'm just saying it frustrates me because I see anyway, that's mental health for you. Slightly different tack, what is one challenge that you hope to face or overcome by the end of the year?
Such an interesting one.
Yeah, end of the year is rapidly approaching as well.
Because I've got things where it's like little things. Like, I'd like to go on my phone less, just in general. And I do make some attempts at it, and then other attempts it's like rubbish. But like a big challenge? Oh, I don't know. Maybe I'd like to stop grieving the fact that I had to give up overseas university.
Ooh.
Because I'm really tired of grieving it. but it won't go away. You know, like, it's finished and I'm not going back, but I'm still sad.
Yeah, that's a really interesting one. And I didn't realize that you, I guess, were struggling with that. Well, not struggling, but...
Well, because it's such a, like, it's a, such a, I don't want to say ridiculous thing to struggle with, because obviously, like, you know, there are so many problems in the world, right? And the fact that I only got 1 year instead of 3 years at my overseas university because there's a life-threatening pandemic, you know, it's, I still got a lot. But like,
yeah, but you shouldn't minimize it. No, because...
and like I did grieve it, but I guess like I haven't seen my friends in a long time and they're all graduating now, like in 6 months. And I,
oh man,
and I added on 3 to 4 years to my degree, which is like, it's there's just like a lot of things. But someone gave me really good advice and they were like, you need to just let go of any anger you have towards it because that's just getting you nowhere. And like, yeah, be sad, but being angry about it will not help at all. And so at least I haven't been angry at all about it because I got that advice. But yeah, I'd like to stop grieving it. That would be a good challenge.
That's a really good answer. I'm trying to think of mine. My laptop is absolutely taking off. I don't know. I'm going to try... My brain immediately goes to, I want to go skydiving, and I have for, like, freaking forever.
Interesting.
Yeah. But I don't really see that happening by the end of the year.
Why not?
Great question. I don't know, I feel like my end of the year is so planned.
But I mean, like, a skydiver is so short.
Very short, actually.
Like half a day. Surely you have half a day from now until January.
Yeah, maybe that is it. Well, because I thought, okay, I've thought about it, given that I've wanted to do it for literally forever.
Yeah.
And I was like, maybe I should go to Wanaka, because I feel like Wanaka's pretty.
Oh, yeah. If you're going to do it, get a pretty view.
That's my thing. And I'm like, I don't want to really go skydiving in Auckland. Sorry, Aucklanders. But yeah, maybe that's it. Maybe that's something that I've on my bucket list that I've...
Yeah. That would be cool.
A bit of a challenge. Yeah, already.
There we go. There you go. You've added something. You've added a box to tick. Okay, next one. But on the same line, if you had to give your 15-year-old self one piece of advice, what would that advice be?
Oh, this is for my 15-year-old self and myself right now.
Yeah.
Same advice. Just going to learn how to actually ingest it.
Right, yes.
I'd say you don't have to have it all figured out and you don't have to have a plan, I think, is because I'd love to have a plan and know how to execute it and have a really clear, distinguished pathway to success.
Yes.
You know?
Oh, wouldn't we all? Oh, that would be great.
That would be so easy.
If it was like, you tick these boxes and you will be good.
Yeah, you just strap on in and then you just... do all the things and you get there. And I think that is something that it's taken me ages to kind of get over, is the fact that actually there isn't, I still struggle with this when making decisions. Like, I have to remind myself that there isn't one optimal solution. You know what I mean? Yeah.
And
like, there are just different pathways.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if you make a decision and then it's not what you thought it was going to be, it's not, you didn't make the wrong decision.
No. And even if you did make the wrong decision, like, it's life and you're going to make lots of wrong decisions. It's okay.
Yeah, and I still struggle with that. And I know my 15-year-old self still struggle with that. So
interesting.
That's going to be me. Yeah.
I would tell my 15-year-old self to stop getting involved. I have a big heart and I'm interested in everyone and everything. Not malicely, just like, you know, genuinely concerned about people and genuinely interested in people. But it's not very helpful, especially when you're 15 years old and, like, going through puberty and you're emotional and everything like that. Like, being involved in everyone and everything only leaves yourself hurt because people are going to focus on themselves and you need to focus on yourself. Because there's nothing wrong with that. But, yeah, I think I just got myself into a lot of trouble that was unnecessary and I wasn't trying to get into trouble and it was just because... instead of focusing on myself and just like leaving myself out of it, I involved myself in things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And like, it would have saved me a lot of pain if I just told myself to get out.
Yeah, and that people can look after themselves and you don't have to worry for them.
Well, even like not sometimes. Even like looking after them, just like just don't
just involving yourself.
Yeah, just like just shut up, Abby. Just go away. Let someone else be in the middle of it.
Another question. What are some ways to cope in a digital world? So with social media pressure and the kind of self-esteem.
Yeah. I find this one really hard because I think that social media is the hardest thing that we have to deal with, which is so stupid because it's like, well, just delete it and then it's done. But unfortunately, that's not really the case. And it is kind of vital for a lot of things, like even like advertising our podcast, you know, how are we supposed to advertise it if we don't have social media?
I know, and one of my biggest supporter, one of my flatmates, she doesn't have Instagram, and we released the podcast, and then like a couple of days later, another flatmate was like, "Oh, I listened to it, so good, blah blah blah," and then she was like, oh, "Is it out? Is it out? Nobody told me," and I'm like, "Oh my god!"
Yeah, you just assume everything's on social media, or even like Facebook events, like party planning is just on Facebook. You know, everything's just done
online. Everything's
online. Yeah, so. You can't remove yourself, so you have to set boundaries for yourself, which is very hard because trying to be your parent is impossible because we all used to growl at our parents whenever they tried to give us boundaries. So trying to do it for yourself is not an easy task, but I think it's necessary, and I think that's it. And also just being real with yourself. Because I think we're getting a lot more realness on Instagram and stuff about, like, you know, editing of images. I didn't even... Have you seen the videos of people editing videos? Like, their bodies in videos?
Oh, yeah. I did know that was a thing.
I didn't know you could do that. Oh. Like, obviously, I knew you could, like, attempt to do it, but I didn't know it looked that realistic.
That's my thing. Like, when people go, oh, you know, Photoshop, and, like, oh, you can edit your videos. And I'm like, yeah. But, like... My assumption is that no one does because I don't. So then I'm like,
yeah,
but only like stupid celebrities do. Or like if it's, like nobody thinks that celebrities
are. Or like if it's like done, it generally is like kind of noticeable or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
But it is not. And I was like, oh my God. Like I have been like not even spend time, you know, wondering over it, but just I was like, wow. Like that blew my mind.
Yeah, that's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
There is a lot of pressure to keep up, I think, as well, online.
Yeah.
But even, like, as I said, like, I deleted Instagram, and then I went and I checked it today, like, on my internet browser or something. And I'm like, there was this expectation within me that I was, like, I was going to have missed this thing. I have all these alerts. I'm like, I don't know. And I went on, and I'm like, literally nothing has happened.
See, okay, I just remembered. This is the other thing I'd give my 15-year-old self advice on. I'd tell myself to start a YouTube channel. Because like
it's not too late.
No, it is. because like you see all these people and it's like they start. Because okay, your starting point is cringy, and it's icky and it's gross.
It's always gonna be.
Yeah, but like doing it at 15, it's fine.
No, Abby, you get bullied at school because your whole world is everyone at school.
Yeah. I mean, true, but then also like, I don't know. I would have been like just. Do it and stick with it and see where it gets you because that would have been interesting, you know? I think I've seen a lot of people like make careers out of it and I'm like, interesting, I wonder what would have happened or if I'm even interesting enough.
I reckon it always feels like the whole world is watching or like when you start something, you know what I mean? Like when you're 15 it feels like, oh my god, everyone will see this, and I think when you're 21 it's like, god, like I've got all my, like, uni friends and everyone will, like, you know what I mean? Like, it feels too late because it's too present and it's too cringy right now. But I don't think that's ever, like, changes.
No, I don't think so either. I think that...
But I do wonder.
I've become less attracted to the whole thing just because the amount of ridicule that people in the media eye face is a lot.
Oh, my gosh,
and, like, I'm trying to get myself off of social media, not onto it more, so... But yeah.
But I, oh my god, I totally would have.
Yeah.
Imagine where you'd be.
Exactly.
You'd be a little chef.
That's what I'm meaning. Like, what would I have been? Yeah. You know, it would have been interesting. But anyway,
anyway.
But yeah, getting that's off social media, not onto it.
Yeah. Now, my follow-up question to the millennial social media world.
Yeah.
What age would you let your future child or children go or, like, on social media, or would you ban it completely or give them an iPad? What is your philosophy around that?
Okay, interesting. So I have witnessed kids with iPads. I don't think a kid in primary school should have an iPad, but here's the problem, is that a lot of kids now need technology for school.
Yeah.
And a lot of that is including an iPad. But the thing is that I see kids wrapped up in games on their iPad, and it really, I'm like, just go outside or, you know, play with toys or do something. And imagine we can't get off our phones. So how hard is it for a little, like, 6-year-old's brain to be like, okay, I need to get off now, you know? Like, they're not able to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's one aspect, the iPad thing. But with social media, I got on it pretty young.
Yeah.
And I think that I don't think banning things is the way to do anything, because you're just sending them in there unequipped. Because they're going to do it anyway. Everyone else is doing it. And if they don't do it, then you've got a really lucky kid that listens to you. Because most kids aren't going to listen to you about that if everyone else is on it. So instead of banning something, I'd actually rather just have an open relationship and conversation about it, you know? Mm-hmm. And even have them, like, willing to, like, bring stuff to me, even if it's just, like, a funny video. Just so that we have, like, this open communication link of, like, just being very open about social media and not worrying about what they're doing on there. Because if I can talk to them about it, at least I'm equipping them. Because you can't remove your kids from society and what society is doing. All you can do is, like, give them the best tools you can.
That's my thing. When people, like, I get really frustrated when I see parents who are like, my child is never going to go online until, you know, this age, or they're 18 or whatever, you know what I mean? You see those, like, outrageous
videos. Or they're like, my kid's not going to date till they leave school. It's like, oh, literally, they're probably dating.
But with, like, online stuff, I'm like, the world, the future is going to be so embedded in digital, you know, intelligence. You've got to know how stuff works. And I think if you're actually depriving your kids of technology, you kind of, I don't know, it seems really problematic.
Teach them a healthy relationship with it. Like, don't assume that they'll get to a certain age and know how to have a healthy relationship with it. That's not how it works. Mm-hmm. You know, we are humans. We have addictive personalities, and technology is literally like a drug to our brains. So you can't just expect there to be a magic age where everything's fine, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and the skills are super important. So I like that answer. I wasn't sure what you were going
to
go with.
I think one thing is that, like, because obviously kids going on buses or going to school or anything like that, generally we give our kids phones a bit younger these days, but I definitely don't want to give my kid a smartphone. Like, I just want to give them, like, a flip phone or, like,
I had a Nokia.
Yeah.
I had a Nokia till about year 9.
Same. No, I had a Nokia.
And it was so iconic.
Oh, I had a couple different Nokias. But the main thing was, like, one, you're not going on social media on them. You know, you're not really, and it's not the internet. And, like, they can text their friends, but that's about it. And, like, you know, how
play Snake.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's good because, like, it's not as addicting, you know? It doesn't do as much to give the little chemicals in the brain. So that's another thing that I think I'll be doing. But who knows, honestly. I feel like with parenting, everyone's like, oh, you just say all this stuff and then it actually happens and you're like, whoa.
Oh, totally. Oh my God, yeah.
So
especially with technology, it's going to change so quickly.
Yeah, so just no pressure on myself, and I just hope to give my kids...
do the best you can.
Yeah, I just hope to give them skills, and let's figure it out together, I guess. Okay. If you're struggling and you can't get help, what are some things that you can do? This is a tricky one.
This is very tricky. I'm trying to look at the you can't get help, and I don't know whether that's like a you don't have resource to, like, formal help is probably how I'm going to
Yeah, I'm guessing that. like
a counselor or
yeah, that's what I'm interpreting
doctor
it.
Or something.
Mm-hmm. I would say you still need to talk.
Yeah.
Like, even if it's not a medical professional, talking is a very vital stage of helping yourself, because dealing with things by yourself can only get you so far.
Yeah, and I'd say as well, like, if you're not comfortable talking about necessarily your problems, just to let someone know that you're not in the best place is another really good point, and kind of alleviates that
yeah
kind of feeling that you're trapped. Self-help ways of things, I'd say, if you're feeling super unmotivated to do anything and you're just kind of in a bit of a hole, really good ways to kind of the night before just sit down with a piece of paper and write down a few things that you think you can do tomorrow. So it's like just a checklist of like brush your teeth or like spend 15 minutes reading a book or something that's like
but also
achievable and simple.
Pick things that you want to do, I think, is a major thing for me. Because oftentimes we'll like give ourselves tasks, but the tasks are all things that like we're kind of dreading doing. And it's like, why would you start that task list? You know, like, would you start all those tasks? You don't want to do them. So like, if you are struggling with motivation, giving yourself some things that you do want to do can like work your way up to it, you know, and get you going.
I think as well, a lot of us tend to write to-do lists with output-based goals. So it's like, I'm going to write this essay or write this paragraph. Mm. And like, you know that you've done the task once that thing is done.
Yeah.
Instead of doing that, I'd flip it on its head and do like an input-based task. So it's like, I'm going to spend 15 minutes doing this. And I think that means that you have so much more control over it and you can achieve it whether or not there's like the output. That you're proud of.
Yeah, or just giving yourself achievable tasks in general.
Oh my god, yeah. Because I think as well, a lot, like, we tend to think that motivation drives action, but in many ways, action kind of drives motivation. So, like, once you do something and you get that sense of achievement, then it's kind of like, oh, I actually can do more than I anticipated, or kind of that builds the motivation to then do more things. So it's kind of starting that little first bit, which is Oh my god, so hard sometimes.
The thing I've been finding, especially in lockdown, is that I was really struggling to get all my uni work done each day because it's just, there's no routine. And now I have found that if I get a decent chunk of it done before midday, for some reason there's like this 12 p.m. like slot in my brain. And if I'm able to do like a decent amount before then I feel like I've done so much that like it's only a little bit left to do. You know, or like it feels like I've achieved something, and for some reason for me that 12 p.m. like feeling like I've done enough is important in my motivation and my ability to get everything done. I mean, obviously everyone's different in that little slot, but being aware of like what that slot is for you and then just changing your routine to work around that so you do feel like you've succeeded.
Yeah, no, that's a really good one, kind of building in a time constraint in your brain, at least. Another thing that you touched on as well that I think is really key is to kind of set up one little, just for starters, just like set up one little routine that you know you want to do and can do. So it's like, whether that's like I get up in the morning and I go make a coffee and then I sit down for 10 minutes and I just kind of sit by the window and
something that you like to do that's going to get you up and going to get you going.
Yeah, and if you do nothing else, it's like, that is my routine. And you don't have to, because I think as well, when you're really, like, struggling, or even just feeling a bit flat, it can be really hard to know what to do.
Yeah.
And if you've got a routine, it takes out all of that decision-making power that you just literally and simply do not have at that period of
That's
time.
That's the thing, like, the whole decision-making power, even I watched this video about, like, you know, really successful business people and stuff like that. And a lot of them take away all their like minuscule decisions because it wastes a lot of their decision making power for bigger decisions. So it's even like, you know, how a lot of people would have a uniform, like they would wear the same thing every day.
What with Steve Jobs?
Yeah. And like stuff like that, which I mean, I'm not quite ready to go down that path yet. I really like having
fashion.
Yeah, I like my fashion. But like, I mean, even if that means planning your outfit the night before so you don't have to get up and spend 10 minutes thinking about it, if that's something that you want to do, or just all those little things, like taking, or even like I like to like pre-think about my meals so I don't have to think about it, like I'll, because I quite enjoy planning a meal, but if you wait till you're tired or you're hungry, then it's just like a lot of effort.
See, I have oats every day for breakfast. That's done. I don't think about it. I just get up and I have my oats and I have my yogurt and I have my blueberries and I just sit down.
So that's what I was going to say. Like, some people are really good at like having that meal that's just really easy and they don't have to think about it. And like, that's really good if you can do that. I can't do that. I really like change in my food. But yeah, just any sort of like taking away minuscule decisions that are going to have little to no impact on your day, but you're using up all this energy making them, that can be really beneficial because it leaves you more energy to just like spend time doing the things that you want to do or spend time helping yourself or anything like that.
Yeah. Automate the decisions for things that you don't care about.
Yeah.
So if you don't care about fashion, just be like, sweet, I'm just going to wear this. Doesn't matter. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, totally.
Talking about fashion.
Okay. Yeah, finally, absolute segue. What is one piece of clothing that you couldn't do without? A bit of a fun one to end.
This is such a big one. Oh my God, I can't pick one thing.
Such a big one.
Just like in general. The clothing is so broad and vast. Do you have an answer?
Well, right now it's my black jeans. Very basic, very boring. I love them. I wear them almost every day.
Interesting.
It's very simple.
Yeah.
Nothing too crazy. I feel like I should have a more fun answer or some like piece of clothing that changed the way I viewed fashion or something, but absolutely
not.
You
see, that's the
thing. It's just the jeans that I wear.
See, okay. So realistically, like, the problem is I'm in lockdown, so I'm thinking about like what I couldn't live without right now. And it's like a baggy jumper and my Lululemon aligned tights that are made to make you feel really nice because I need these for my chronic pain because they're the only thing that don't pressure point my body.
Oh yeah. I was gonna hit you up about that actually because I've heard you rave about them and I was gonna get them but I couldn't remember what they were called.
Yeah,
the A-line?
Align. The Align tights.
Okay, beautiful.
Like, they're, I mean, I work out in them, but they're not like a complete workout material. I mean, they are a workout material, but like there's more,
they're slightly softer,
yeah,
I think,
but they're the comfiest things ever. Ever. And they were made with people with chronic pain and stuff in mind, and they're just so I couldn't live without those.
I thought you were gonna say they were made in like some sweatshop.
No,
or something.
Okay. No, here's my other issue, right? I am trying to shop sustainably. I've made a lot of steps in terms of trying to be eco aware because obviously I know that I personally can't turn around this crisis that we have, but I know that I don't like the argument of, oh, you can't do it, so why are you doing it? Because it's like, that's just bullshit. It's like saying, if you can't fix the whole thing, why do anything? Like, to make it slightly better, I don't know, to do something, because doing something's better than nothing.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I, you know, changed a lot of what I ate and all those types of things. And I was like, you know, I am so aware of fast fashion and I have cut certain things out, but I haven't cut everything out. And I just think I should challenge myself to do it. And I think I should challenge myself to just be as sustainable as actually possible. But I don't know how to cut out Lululemon.
Yeah, I think Lululemon's my guilty pleasure as well, actually. I don't know. There's just like...
All the sustainable sports brands are like online brands, so I can't...
try stuff on.
And it's like I don't have $90 to spend just on a whim that hopefully they feel nice.
Agreed.
You know?
Yeah, I know, I kind of got to agree with you. And I think as well, like with Lululemon, like they're so expensive, they're so stupidly expensive,
but they're so nice,
but the best. But I think because they're so expensive, like I will wear them to death and I will only buy like,
I have the same tights that I have for like 4 years.
Yeah, so I think I...
In that way, it's kind of sustainable.
We're doing our best, and also Lululemon is God.
Oh my God, the material's just so nice. But anyway...
Is that your one piece of clothing?
My Align tights. Oh, and my jumper, and oh, there's just so many pieces of clothing. A nice dress, a basic white t-shirt.
We're getting your fashionista.
Just like, you know how on Instagram there's like people teaching you how to make like a basic closet?
Uh-huh.
Like what's it called? A capsule closet.
Uh-huh.
Just everything in the capsule closet I just love because it's just basics that just work.
One piece of clothing is your wardrobe.
Is my capsule closet. No. Okay, Align tight.
Okay.
Just
lock it in. Final answer.
Amazing.
Effort. Alrighty.
I'm really good at decision making. Well, actually, no, I am good at decision making. I'm not good at deciding favorites. I can't give you a favorite for anything. Literally anything.
Yeah.
Movie, food, nothing. Can't do it.
It's too big
to
like put to one
like
thing.
People like favorite song. I'm like, I don't know the song I'm listening to right now. Like, I don't... Oh, I change.
Mm. Favorites are hard because I think people, there's an episode tangent, but I feel like it's like, if that's the best of the best and you think that that's terrible, then oh my god.
Oh, I don't give a shit what other people think. I just...
Oh, then why do you care?
No, I don't just care. I just genuinely don't have a favorite.
Oh, see, I get flustered when people ask me for my favorite thing because I'm like, this is a really big decision and I don't know what it is and I don't know anything.
No, if I had a favorite, I'd say it. Like, I'm like, for food, it's most likely pizza, but that's such a hard call because I'm like, oh, there's so many good things. I just love too many things, to be honest. Like, just
too much love.
I just have too much love for everything. You know, I just can't decide on anything. But it's okay. I'd rather have more favorites than less.
Yeah. What a lovely episode that was.
How fun. That was very fun. Hopefully...
Yeah, thanks so much for the questions.
And yeah, and hopefully that was interesting or a little bit different. It was cool.
That was a Radio 1 91 FM podcast. You can find more at r1.co.nz or wherever quality content is found.